The 2006 International AIDS Conference, Time to Deliver, brought to you by KaiserNetwork.org.
Good evening, and welcome to this session on media and AIDS, spreading information faster than the disease. It's a great pleasure for me to open this session where we have an outstanding panel of people who, from a variety of different perspectives, are involved in the response to HIV and AIDS, particularly through using the media. There's been many discussions and a lot of mention throughout this conference thus far about the incredibly important role that media can play. We have before us people who can talk very knowledgeably and expertly about that issue, and I think this is going to be an incredibly lively session. So I'm not going to take up a lot of time, but just want to thank you for being here and welcome you. It's now my honor to introduce our first speaker, Mr. Richard Gere. Now, when you're Richard Gere, you probably don't need a long introduction, but I do. I think he's well known to many. This is the second International AIDS Conference that Richard has attended, and it's wonderful to have somebody of his stature and his visibility lend that credibility to this issue and lend his considerable passion and commitment to HIV and other issues. As you know, he's an internationally known film actor and dedicated social activist and philanthropist. For more than 25 years, he's worked to bring attention and effective solution to human problems rooted in ignorance, injustice, and inequality. Through his private foundation, the Gere Foundation, Mr. Gere has served as a lifetime advocate and supporter of numerous human rights and humanitarian causes. He has since then deepened his involvement, founding the Healing the Divide Foundation in 2001. This foundation's mission is to promote understanding, cooperation, and visionary approaches to issues that threaten the welfare and prosperity of people and communities throughout the world. That's the official part of the introduction. I would just like to say personally, over the last few years, I've had the pleasure of working with Richard in a project that we've worked together with in India. I have been impressed by his commitment, his intelligence, his passion, and his incredible ability to learn and keep learning and keep adapting the more he knows. The more he knows, the more committed he has become to this issue. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce Richard Gere.
I am not worthy. Helene is talking. I'll tell you how I usually see Helene. In my office in New York, and she has a suitcase with her. And it's usually the end of a day, Friday, at maybe 7 o'clock at night. Everyone else is left, and it's she and I and Bob Kelty, and we're sitting there talking about things. And we're just killing time, basically, for her to catch the next plane to go someplace else to have another meeting talking about the same stuff. She's the hardest working woman in the AIDS business. Helene Gale. So this panel is on media. Okay. Sit down in front here if you can. Look, when I started my own explorations on how I could help this issue, and actually I was essentially a kid. It was in the early 80s, and the disease was just being known, and it was in my community. And I remember that moment when Rock Hudson came out. Not only that he was gay, but he was HIV positive. And at that point, he was dying of AIDS. And it was such a shock to the system in America. Because this was someone who was in our home. That was someone that we knew quite well for decades, being a movie star and a television star, and someone who was part of us, deep inside of our hearts. And it was the first time that as America, we took it seriously. And her good friend, his good friend, Elizabeth Taylor, came out and started talking on the subject. And there was another icon. Such power, again, just to like cut to the center of a culture, very quickly, very directly. And I think it was, in many ways, an inspiration to me. What I would do later on is work with people who had that ability to cut through very quickly and very deeply into the heart of a culture, wherever it is. Now, I've been working for the last 5 or 6 years in India, primarily. But the approach was the same. It's finding cultural icons who have that really quick, deep ability to communicate to people in an unspoken way. It slips through the thoughts and just gets there, hits the mark. And I started to devise a system based on a power structure of how to change society. Now, an icon in itself is pretty useless. It's just energy. But it's an ability, it's a potential. Now, if you marry that with media companies and use intelligence and skill and tell the truth and tell it authentically, you can be incredibly powerful in messaging and education. Now, as we started doing that in India, I evolved the system and refined it. I was amazed that how satisfying it was for us to do it, but how effective it was in the community and how much it was needed in the community. I think it was like 2 years ago that the first media conference was done in New York at the UN. I mean, it was Kofi Annan had suggested this first, and Kaiser Family Foundation organized this meeting. And it was the largest media heads in the world were at this meeting. Debated, spoke with great energy, and made commitments, signed the deals then of taking on the responsibility of educating the world truthfully, honestly, from the heart, and using the skills they had as professionals to educate the world on HIV/AIDS. Using that as a model, and at the suggestion, actually, of my good friend Peter Mukherjee, who's sitting right here, we decided to do the same thing in India. And luckily we had a prime minister there, Prime Minister Singh, who was newly elected, who agreed. We had a meeting with him soon after he took office, and he had been speaking about HIV/AIDS and had it in his heart. It was genuine and knew that it was important to deal with the subject and in a impassioned way, in a complete way, in a meaningful way. And he very readily agreed to have a massive media summit at his residence, and he would convene it, and he would stay there for the entire time. This came about, there were 50 media owners, heads, CEOs at this meeting, and I was told there hadn't been a meeting like this of media heads since partition in India in 1950. I think it was 49 or 50. 47, sorry, it was partition. And it was amazing to me to see the power that this generated in government, in the media itself, seeing that they had partners. They had, it was print, it was periodicals, it was radio, it was television, satellite, terrestrial. It was the full range of seasoned CEOs and owners who decided to make the commitment to work on this in a very focused way. Now, what we had to bring to that was the cultural icons part. And it is a vital part of this thing. Media in itself can do very little, but when you empower it with that kind of X quality, the factor that again, gets through the thoughts, between thoughts, and moves us in mysterious ways. Working together, we found that over the last several years, we've been able to do things that are, I think, quite extraordinary. We saw some of the clips just about an hour ago of the things that had been generated from PSAs for family members, for kids, for people in the north and the south, for high incomes, low incomes, the embedding in programming, game shows, a wide variety of possibilities that we have generated over the last couple of years, and which I think is actually very quick for this kind of thing. We were inventing the process and all of them at a high quality, all of them that could be used in almost any media. We then had another media summit in Russia, which I was kind of flabbergasted. The former Soviet Union, all the media heads, major media heads in the former Soviet Union, gathered in Moscow and went through the same process, where they created essentially a brotherhood of commitment on this subject, way more than the government had done. Putin himself was not there, and it was a lower-level person from government, but private media had taken this on as their responsibility. I think that is the key marriage that can change the world and the world that we're dealing with now, HIV/AIDS, is that kind of a partnership. But I'm going to emphasize again to my brothers and sisters here and to my partners in all the work we've done, it has to be genuine. There's none of this that you can do from formula, and it works. You got to feel it in your heart. I have to feel it in my heart, or it doesn't work. Peter has to feel it from his heart, or it doesn't work. It doesn't trickle down to all the creative people who actually do the work in his company. So the kind of private, wonderful, meaningful work is still there in all of us that makes us all connected in this process, that ability to find something genuine, use the techniques and technology of who we are. I mean, I don't know anything about doing what Peter does. He doesn't know doing what I do. But we said this partnership makes something larger than both of us. Now, we know from surveys that media in general is where most people get their information. It's what media tells them, what's television, what radio. But not only pure, there's different types of communication, education. There's intellectual thought process information, which is really important, especially about a subject like this. We must be rational about HIV/AIDS. But there's this other communication, which is a different kind and probably the most difficult, which is deals with stigma, deals with deep-seated emotion. And I think the best way of dealing with that, it's very hard in a PSA, I found, to deal with that. Embedding in storylines, telling stories, getting to know people over a period of time. And in one of the cases, I think it was the medical show that you had done on Star TV, which I think over about 9 episodes, you followed an HIV storyline. I think you actually won an Emmy Award for this program as well. But it humanized it in that kind of mysterious way, done with high quality, done with wonderful actors, good writing, that we felt this character. And then it becomes real, authentic, this change. It's not a fake kind of acceptance and a phony kind of reduction of stigma, but an empathy that is deep and real. And that, to me, is the important thing that media can do and is unique in many ways to what we can offer. I don't know what else to talk about. Is there anything else I should be jabbering about? I'm looking over at Tina here. Is that okay? Or my wife? My wife carries it. Carrie, stand up! My wife, Carrie Lowell, ladies and gentlemen. Anyhow, this is something that I deeply believe in, and I think we have a wonderful panel of people who are going to enlighten us all with what they have to say. Thank you very much.
Everyone, welcome. Welcome. I'm Bill Rohde. I chair the Global Media AIDS Initiative, and I'm also president of MTV Networks International, and it's really, really great to be here. Thank you. I would like to start, you know, to say the same thing Richard did, but, you know, also thank Helene for her incredible leadership over the years. It has been quite incredible, Helene. Thank you. And also Richard, whose leadership, he didn't bring the photographers, by the way, but his leadership on this issue has, in the media world, his leadership has really been fundamental to the expanded response in our world. And it's really, really made a difference. You have done so much, Richard. Give up the day job, please, so we can have 100%. We need you. Now, last night, we all heard Bill and Melinda Gates. They gave an inspiring opening for this conference that made the critical point that treatment without prevention is unsustainable. Melinda pointed out that less than 1 in 5 people have access to various forms of prevention, including education. On top of that, the United Nations has said 2/3 of new infections can be stopped by education. So there's a huge gap there. Peter Piot put an urgent emphasis on prevention and holding everyone accountable for their actions. Now, these were powerful calls to action to step up all areas of prevention, and media has such a crucial, critical role to play. Now, many of the people who have the most influence to expand prevention through education and awareness are actually sitting on this stage, and many of you in this room. Media have such a huge role to play in this fight, and as a member of the media industry, I can fully admit we're not doing enough. Media can actually be a force of good. When is the last time you have heard media can be a force for good? Well, here, media can be a force for good. Now, 2.5 years ago, the Secretary General, with the help of UNAIDS and the Kaiser Family Foundation, launched the Global Media AIDS Initiative. This was really a call for the first time on the world's media leaders to expand their commitments to HIV/AIDS. It's no longer an option. The Global Media AIDS Initiative has exceeded all expectations in the 2 years since. Around 160 companies from over 70 countries are now involved in the effort, providing audiences with life-saving information that raises awareness and fight stigma and discrimination. Media companies have put their creative and technical resources to work, producing hundreds of public service announcements and integrating HIV and AIDS themes into the programming, including scripts, something that Richard was talking about earlier. Hundreds of millions of dollars worth of airtime has been contributed. These campaigns include, very importantly, multiple platforms: billboards, consumer products, radio, TV, and critically now in the digital world, online, and very critically in the parts of the world where the infrastructure is not built, mobile phone, which can stimulate viral messaging. We're seeing it already. Since January 2004, summits of media executives have been organized in Johannesburg, Moscow, New Delhi, Rio, Cannes, San Francisco, Bridgetown, Barbados. And these haven't just been talking summits. They've been creative think tanks and workshops for journalists, and they've been held all across the globe. Our efforts even included a unique evening that I was privileged to host among China media leaders earlier this year. It was quite an event. Now, all of these meetings have resulted in new coalitions, even among competitors of broadcasters. And it has also resulted in expanded programming, and increasing resources, and importantly, specific airtime commitments, specific inventory commitments. Now, during today's sessions, we're going to speak directly to some of the most dynamic and committed leaders from the media industry. Please let me now introduce each one of these panelists. First, welcome Dr. Allison Leacock, General Manager of the Caribbean Broadcasting Corporation from Barbados. In May, over 30 broadcasters from across the region came together to form a Caribbean broadcast media partnership on HIV/AIDS. This partnership was launched at a regional summit of media executives organized by the Kaiser Family Foundation. The results included a regional public service campaign, original long-form programming, creative workshops and journalism trainings, and Dr. Leacock is chairing the steering committee, which is leading this effort, which is the first of its kind in the region. Next, allow me to introduce to her right, let me introduce Mr. Soli Mokwedli, Chief Operating Officer of the South African Broadcasting Corporation. For years, SABC has been a leader in Africa for its commitment to HIV/AIDS, producing hundreds of hours of HIV-themed programming, including its work with Love Life, and Cammy in Sesame Street. Cammy was on the tape. The members of the new African Broadcast Media Partnership Against HIV/AIDS, which Solly is leading, have committed an incredible 5% of all daytime airtime to HIV/AIDS related content. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but when you add it all up, that is a lot. It's breakthrough. This partnership was launched last October with the help of the Kaiser Foundation and the Nelson Mandela Foundation. Next, please welcome to Solly's right, please welcome Mr. Peter Mukherjee, CEO of Star India. Over the past 2 years, Star India has partnered with the Heroes Project, which Richard was talking about, on a major HIV/AIDS awareness campaign. It incorporates PSAs, again, long-form programming, and special events with prominent leaders, role models in the country. At a press conference earlier this afternoon, Peter with Richard announced a 3-year extension in the partnership, a major, major testimony to his company's commitment to this issue. Next, allow me to introduce John Tedstrom, founder of Transatlantic Partners Against AIDS and a newly appointed executive director of the Global Business Coalition on HIV and AIDS. TPAA has mobilized over 50 of Russia's largest media companies to join in a groundbreaking HIV awareness campaign. They have mobilized over $200 million worth of contributed airtime across the country and is now recognized by an incredible 62% of Russia's general population. TPAA has also helped to launch a series of training workshops for over 150 journalists across the country. And finally, allow me to introduce Phil Wilson, executive director of the Black AIDS Institute. Phil, who has been a leader among the African American response to HIV/AIDS in the United States for over 20 years, works closely with U.S.-based media companies and journalists to focus their attention on the disproportionate impact of this epidemic on this community. So welcome to all of our panelists, and thank you for making the time to join us this evening. Now, we're going to change the format a little bit. So instead of asking each of our panelists to deliver a formal presentation, I thought instead it might be useful to organize today's panel really as a talk show. So I'll be leading the discussion among the panelists for the first part, and then we'll open the floor to questions from you. So let's begin. Ready? Okay, there we go. To Solly, you're leading an initiative to mobilize broadcasters from over 20 countries in Africa to develop and share HIV-related content and programming resources. This is a major effort, especially given that broadcasters have pledged, again, up to 5% of daytime airtime to HIV-related messages. Often, AIDS content is considered part of the company's social interest, not its commercial interest. Can you tell me how HIV fits in as a business priority for SABC?
Well, thank you very much, Bill, and thank you to our audience here. Well, I actually am sitting here not only representing the SABC, although thank you for the compliments that the SABC has done quite a lot on the African continent. But we came together as a coalition of African broadcasters from about 22 African countries, and we intend to increase the reach across the African continent to cover all 52 countries. And we are broadcasters now from representing 37 broadcasters. Public service, like the SABC, Nigeria Broadcasting, Kenya Broadcasting, Tanzania, as well as commercial broadcasters. Now, as you said, and hitherto, HIV and AIDS messaging has always been considered as just social responsibility kind of content in the form of PSA, public service announcements. When we got together as African broadcasters, we felt that there is a need for a significant shift in the role of broadcasters in how we communicate these messages. Why? Because we are coming from the area of the world which is highly affected. More than 64% of the people who are affected by HIV and AIDS are coming from our region. And it means that we as broadcasters have to play a much more important role in trying to change attitudes and behaviors. We felt the first thing, therefore, that has to happen is HIV and AIDS issues have to become our own responsibility as businesses ourselves, as companies. So we need to adopt a business-centered approach with regards to HIV and AIDS. What does that mean? First, HIV AIDS has to become part of our business models. It has to become part of our strategies, our business strategies, our budgets, on how we deal with our own employees as companies in our own countries. By so doing, it is going to ensure that every employee, whether they are a producer, whether they are a sweeper, whether they are a camera person, understands and takes the issues of HIV AIDS very seriously. But beyond that, we then decided that we should, as you mentioned earlier on, dedicate at least 5% of our airtime towards HIV AIDS messaging. 5% means about an hour in total airtime if you take from 6 o'clock to midnight, about 18 hours of broadcast. And 50% of that has to be at prime time. Now, that's a very significant contribution. In fact, it is very historic that on an everyday basis, all what you're going to have is no longer only PSAs, but you are going to have more than an hour of programming that is dedicated to HIV and AIDS messaging. That is going to ensure that you can do what Mr. Gehr spoke about earlier, that you have more content that is pervasive beyond the PSAs. We'll talk later on about exactly the nature of the messaging. But another important element before I finish here is that we decided you have to change and make a significant shift in how you communicate. In other words, how you use that 1 hour, what kind of messaging and how you communicate HIV and AIDS messaging, and we'll talk more about that. But essentially, it is a business-centered approach, making HIV AIDS very central to our businesses.
Okay, thank you, Sully. So really part of the DNA of a company's culture, and it's only sustainable if it's part of a business strategy and not just the social interest. All right, let me go to Allison. You've just launched an exciting new initiative across 20 islands in the Caribbean to coordinate the media response and expand programming. Compared to Africa, I can imagine there are unique challenges facing a smaller region like the Caribbean, where populations in each country are relatively small and broadcasters don't have as many resources to produce local content. So how will this coordinated partnership help to address these problems? I mean, how will it work, and how do you develop a coordinated response?
Well, the launch of our partnership in May was a very critical step in that direction. It was an unprecedented gathering of media leaders in the Caribbean. And coming out of that summit, we recognized the power of our synergies in the region. The Caribbean is just behind sub-Saharan Africa in the prevalence of AIDS, with vulnerability between persons between the ages of 15 and 44. That's our most productive sector. So the power of the media to educate our audiences and indeed to expand, as Solly suggested, the kinds of programming that will demonstrate to our audiences that we are serious about it, that we will in fact lead this initiative. Within the region, we have had a number of organizations that we've supported, World AIDS Day and public service announcements. But to really lead this initiative and to be able to work with the programming, we certainly wouldn't have the financial resources, because many of the regional broadcasters have a hybrid responsibility of being public service broadcasters as well as commercially viable entities. And therefore, the ability to have repurposed messaging, which has been provided by the BET, Wrap It Up, Protect Yourself, Respect Yourself. And very recently, we had a major programming package that we've circulated across the region. The steering committee comprises members from St. Lucia, Grenada, Belize, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and we are working to ensure that we can determine blocks of programming across the region where we will focus on a particular area and a particular message for a period of time to strengthen the impact of those messages. Embedded messaging in long-form programming is going to be another very effective tool for us, because we are not in a position at this juncture to be able to have the economies of scale in producing local programming, even though we recognize that our territories are so small and vulnerable. We have an influx of a lot of programming through satellite television, and we can get canned programs for $300 versus $3,000 to produce a local program. So this ability to have the exchange of programs across our territories is certainly going to be a very helpful mechanism in ensuring that the partnership is effective. As the Caribbean launches the Caribbean Single Market and Economy, this kind of initiative led by the media is even more important, because as was suggested earlier, it's important for the media, I think, to be used as a tool of positive change and positive influence. And the days of us only going for the hot story that's controversial has to change. And in the Caribbean, where our islands are so small and we are frequently subsumed in Latin America or Central America, we are distinctly different. And I was very pleased to hear President Clinton this morning comment on perhaps one very important hopeful area, and that is that it is only in the Caribbean region that the prevalence of AIDS has been reduced. But that doesn't mean that we can be complacent. So this partnership, the Caribbean Broadcast Media Partnership, thanks to the initiative of the Kaiser Family Foundation and our other partners in the region, will be very critical in helping us to get the message across in an effective and dynamic way. And I think the programs, the training of our media professionals will also be a very critical tool in helping us produce whatever programs we can within a certain context for the Caribbean.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Partnerships are critical. They're really the only way. And you've shown that by working together, it has a much, much greater impact. Let's go to Peter. Earlier, you announced that Star India would continue with a 3-year extension in your partnership with the Heroes Project, providing dedicated airtime for HIV-themed programming across all program formats. Your company's commitment to this issue has grown over the past years, grown considerably. It has now become an integral part of your business strategy. It really has. So how do you measure results? How do you know if it's working?
Well, Bill, first of all, thank you for the introduction earlier on. And also, I got to say, I am absolutely amazed by the number of people that are here this evening. I had no idea it was going to be as big and sort of scary. But but I really thank you for taking the time out to come to this, because it is a matter of choice. And, you know, I think you've exercised that, and that's wonderful. In response to what you're saying, how do we measure the success or failure of our initiatives and our sort of strategic direction? You know, it's a constant issue for us with any form of communication that we do in terms of measuring the response, whether it's regular commercial advertising or whether it's our programming or whether it's, you know, in the area of public service advertising. And I think one of the things that we use as a dipstick and as a yardstick is the response from consumers. And the response from consumers is, for us, you know, the most acidic test of success or failure. And we do that on an ongoing basis. We measure response of, you know, each of the different commercials, and you saw some of those in the, you know, in the film earlier on. We've taken account of the fact that we've chosen the characters in those commercials as being popular, as being contemporary and relevant. We've tried to make the commercials as original and impactful and made sure that, you know, that they resonate with people that are watching our channels. But most of all, it is the response that we get as a follow-up. And we get SMS messages on the back of a variety of commercials that we put to air. The Indian version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was one of our most popular shows. And we have injected into that content related to HIV/AIDS, questions related to HIV/AIDS, and the anchor of the show made it a point last December, on December 2, day of the weekend around World AIDS Day, to talk specifically about HIV/AIDS and its relevance to the Indian community overall. So I think when you've got that level of depth, when you have that level of depth going into the originating of the programming and the content, there is no question about the response. And quite clearly, from our point of view, just to echo what you just said, we have extended our sort of participation and our relationship with the Heroes Project for a further 24 months, which we will continue to do perhaps even longer. But for the moment, we've looked at that and we've said, look, this is absolutely working. This has to work, and it can only get bigger and better.
Let's go to stigma and social values. You know, it's been unbelievably difficult to move this needle, and it's been equally as difficult for many of us to see much progress in the fight against stigma. Media can have such a powerful role in changing social attitudes in other areas and also in fighting stigma. Now, I know that each of us in our respective regions face considerable social challenges around HIV/AIDS. But again, it's been hard to see the needle move on this. Let me go to a series of questions and start with John. John, I think we've all been impressed over the past 2 years to witness such an incredible response from the Russian media. Until recently, however, this issue was virtually ignored by the political leaders in the Kremlin. How do you see the role of AIDS-related media efforts impacting the social and political environment in Russia?
It's not working. There it is. Okay, thank you. I think that, you know, in the information age, media is bound to influence policy at every level, whether it's on public health issues or anything else. And I think that there are three pieces to what we've tried to do in Russia and what others have done that allow us to make a difference. First of all is creating the right team. And by the right team, I don't mean just a media team inside our organization, but creating a group of partners, both on the media side and on the expert side, on the content side of the messaging, that will allow us to put the right media messages out there. There's a long list of these partners in our case, but two in particular need to be singled out right now, and that's the Kaiser Family Foundation and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Without the leadership of Matt James and his team, Tina Hoff and Meredith Michelle and Stephen Massey, Jackie Judd, who helps us on the journalism side, the Russia media partnership would not exist today, and that's just an honest fact. And without the experience and the resources and support of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, we wouldn't have been able to do what we are doing now. Those partners, coupled with UNAIDS, coupled with the community of people who are HIV positive, living with HIV in Russia, coupled with our media visionaries, our superstars in the Russian television, radio, print, and outdoor companies, to name a few, together with some progressive and visionary and committed politicians, two of whom I see in this room today, my friends, Mikhail Grishenkov and Valery Zubov, who, without whose support we would never have been able to get off the ground. Bringing these types of this diverse group of magicians together was absolutely essential, and that's getting the who right. Getting the how right was also very important, because in Russia, You know, we're in a situation in which the government influences media greatly but doesn't control it. And we decided to really circumvent the government altogether at the very beginning, and we made this a private sector initiative, harnessing the energy and the resources and the creativity of private media companies in Russia, both at the national level and at the regional level. And it was just a bunch of people who sat around the room, and Richard was there, and Matt was there the first time, and we sat around the room, and we made these promises to each other that we're going to do this. And nobody from the Kremlin picked up the phone and called us and said that this is what you guys got to do. It was grassroots, almost, and it was that passion from the heart that was mentioned earlier that made all the difference. And that leads us to the what. That was the who and the how. The what is all important when it comes to addressing stigma. Working with people, with a community of people living with HIV/AIDS, working with experts at Kaiser, working with UNAIDS, we were able to do very smart messaging. We didn't aim to tackle the world and conquer the world in the first go around. We did very deliberate and intensive surveys of audiences, trying to understand what they knew, what they thought they knew, what they felt about HIV/AIDS. And we picked our battles very carefully, understanding that this is a long-term game, and we can't do everything in the first wave of the campaign. We've got to be in it for the long haul, and we've got to build up the audience receptivity to some of these issues. So there's a big who component, a big how component, and a big what component. And putting all of those together, I think, was the right formula for us.
Thank you, John. It was Peter who said yesterday, it is a long haul. This is the beginning of our second 25 years of fighting this epidemic. Let's go to Phil. Phil, you have been long time committed to reducing stigma and discrimination faced by people living with HIV/AIDS. Can you give us some examples of ways you're working with media in the U.S. to help bring more attention to the impact of AIDS in the black community? And have you seen the needle move?
Well, I'm actually very pleased to say that we have seen the needle move. I mean, as you track the Kaiser Family Foundation reports and the attitudes and the beliefs in black America, we have seen progress. We have seen a huge change in the work that black media has done on this particular issue. We launched a Black Media Task Force on AIDS 4 years ago with three organizations, BET, Essence Magazine, and the National, no, four organizations, BET, Essence Magazine, the National Newspaper Publishers Association, and American Urban Radio Network. Today, there are 1,500 black media organizations that are part of our network. Last year, the print side of our network generated over 55 million media impressions just in the print side of the network. When we started out, the only stories you read about in black media were stories about stigma, they were sensationalized stories, or they were fear stories. Now, today, we have every newspaper in black America is running stories every single month. The National Newspaper Publishers Association announced this month that they're going to run a 25-week series in all 225 of their newspapers. That's half a year commitment to this issue. That's unprecedented. Now, American Urban Radio Networks has made a pledge that every single day that they're going to speak about AIDS for the next year. That's a major commitment. And so, yes, I think we have seen a beginning of this.
Thank you, Phil. Let's go back to Allison. Allison, I know that stigma and homophobia are major problems in the Caribbean. What have the Caribbean broadcasters done to change attitudes and encourage tolerance?
The partnership has a strategic plan, and within that plan, we are going to systematically embark on a number of initiatives to work with partner organizations in the region that have already been trying to raise awareness. I think we have the awareness in the region. I think we have not been able to make the paradigm shift between the awareness and the knowledge about it and the changes in behavior. And part of that is cultural and sociological. we are largely communities that are rooted in religion, strong social and family values, and there is the temptation to be judgmental about the situation rather than analyzing it and recognizing that HIV and AIDS doesn't discriminate. It's really an issue that needs to be addressed by each of us individually, without labels. What we have to try to do, I believe, in the media is to initiate more discussion about the difficult subjects, and it is still difficult in the Caribbean. We are not as open in all cases in discussing the difficult, sensitive areas of relationships and about the fact that there are people in our lives who we're losing because of this disease. What I think I can speak for Barbados and the Caribbean Broadcasting Corporation, which I'm in charge of, we have three radio stations, a cable network, a free-to-air television station, the only one in Barbados, as well as a web portal. And we have already, coming out of the summit in May, we have been able to commit 30 seconds per hour in public service announcements, and the other regional broadcasters are coming on board with that. We hope to get to Solly's level very soon. We have also developed some strategic partnerships with a number of corporate entities. There's a national pledge program that has been initiated in Barbados that will be launched in an island-wide motorcade in just about a week. We are working with our National Cultural Foundation as well as the National HIV and AIDS Commission, headed by Dr. Carol Jacobs, who is also chair of the Global Fund, to ensure that we do a multimedia production to embrace far more people. We have here Dale Ford, one of our reporters, sponsored by the Kaiser Family Foundation, to report on this conference, to get another perspective on how we can infuse deep analytical reporting with appropriate language in our current affairs and news programming. And the intention is that the Caribbean Broadcast Media Partnership will infiltrate all aspects, all genres of our programming to ensure that we address these issues and bring them to the fore where there have been discussions in pockets, where we begin to see what is really the issue and not just speculate about it. And we continue to have the dialogue, but also to share the information to make that possible. Because we are in a region that has this tendency, it will become critical, I think, that the media leads the way in the discussion, because you will get some polarization with the church or the state if you want to go to the point of legislating anything. So I think the media really does have a critical role to play, and that's why this partnership at this time is very important.
Solly, as compared to the rest of the world, Africa has a much longer history of dealing with HIV and AIDS. You said 20 years earlier. So tell me, is the issue still about spreading information and knowledge, or are there other factors that you need to consider when developing AIDS-related messaging? What can you tell, or what can you teach the rest of the world?
Well, clearly, we are saying that there has to be a significant shift from how we've been communicating, because our own surveys, determine that the approach that has been used so far has been threat consequence approach, where you talk about use a condom or you're going to die. Yes, that has had a certain significant success in building up awareness. People are largely aware about HIV and AIDS. They are aware about how infection occurs and the need for protection. But that has not translated into attitudinal or behavior change. As a result, it has not led to a reduction in HIV infections. So that has meant that we need to therefore question ourselves about the efficacy of the messaging that we have been doing. And what we are saying is that we need therefore to target those kind of fundamental trigger points that lead to risk behavior. So what we are saying, therefore, is we need to, in our environment, where more than 50% of the population are young people below the age of 20 years of age, we have to ensure that our communication targets their attitudes and their behavior, that they change behavior. Unless they change behavior, we are going to continuously have risky kind of activity. So what are the things that we're talking about? We are saying our messaging, therefore, have to target the trigger points of that kind of behavior change, such as, given that we're talking largely about young people, what are the things that force them to behave in that way? Issues of peer pressure, for example. Issues of self-esteem. Issues of, Melinda Gates yesterday spoke about stigma. The issue of stigma. The media has to address issue of stigma. So we need to address specific issues rather than only just building awareness. We have to ensure that we provide messaging that is going to lead to behavior and attitudinal change. We are saying it starts with you changing your attitude, changing your behavior to stop AIDS.
Okay, I have three more questions, and I want to open it up to the audience. Let's go to Peter. You talked earlier about the mobile phone and the SMS text strategy. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that? Because this represents a huge opportunity, particularly in the parts of the world where the infrastructure is not as well developed. Can you just briefly touch upon the campaign strategy, and does it really work, the response you received?
Yeah, Bill, we had, or we have in the country today, in excess of 100 million mobile phone users. Now, if you look at it in the grander scheme of things, it is a small chunk of the population. Having said that, you want to be able to deal with the issue of HIV/AIDS in the most sensitive, in the most gentle manner that you possibly can, without affecting the consumer's mindset that exists currently about the taboo on the discussion of HIV/AIDS as a subject. When we added to the public service messaging that we were putting out, when we added to that the additional ingredient of SMS messaging by putting on a short code and enabling consumers or enabling viewers to respond using their mobile phones and get more information almost instantly, it was a revelation to us because the numbers were quite staggering. First of all, we put it onto our, we managed to build it into the program Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which is a local show, and made it a critical part of the of that particular program on that day, and for the weeks that it carried on. The response was in hundreds of thousands. And what it told us was that people who are sitting at home watching TV and are seeing these commercials need some form of immediate call to action. And yes, you can make a telephone call. Unfortunately, in India, a lot of people have telephones that they can use, at that particular point in time. They generally tend to sit there with their mobile phones, and it cuts across the social, the entire demographics of the country, enabling them to get information on HIV/AIDS instantly. And I think one of the things that we've learned from that is that we will inject SMS-related opportunities in every piece of communication that we possibly can with regard to sensitive subjects like HIV/AIDS. So there's no doubt in our minds at all that it's proved to be a meaningful way of communicating and getting that message across and getting information back and forth very, very quickly across the entire socioeconomic grouping of the country.
I just spent the afternoon with a group of young people
And the phone is, the cell phone, the mobile, is really the holy grail. I mean, it is used for everything. Occasionally a phone call, but everything else. And it really represents a tremendous opportunity for us to get the messages out, particularly among young people. Now, in addition to news and public affairs programming, many media companies around the world have leveraged the popularity of entertainment programming to introduce HIV storylines or content. So, Phil, there's a big movement in the media industry to incorporate more user-generated content into our programming. I know you've worked closely with BET and Kaiser to create special programming that's written by members of the broadcast audience rather than a seasoned screenwriter. What kind of impact can user-generated content have that other programming formats cannot capture?
Competition, are we on? Is a competition model. We have a partnership with Kaiser and BET called the Wrap It Up Black AIDS Short Subject Film Competition. And it's funny, when I talk to people about the competition, most people think that the point is the final film. And the way the competition works, we reach out to screenwriters and we say, we want you to submit a screenplay. It has to be 30 minutes or less, and it has to deal with AIDS in Black America. And the winning script gets awarded a $50,000 grant, and their film gets produced and aired on BET. And most folks worry about the final film. But the point for me is not the final film. The point for me is all those people who write scripts who don't win. Because among those folks who write scripts, and we get 200 or 300 or 400 submissions in, that means they're thinking about this issue. And then, in the process of doing the homework for them to submit the scripts, and then whittling it down to select a winner, and then the final product then goes out to a whole universe of folks who then get told that, hey, an everyday person got a chance to make a movie and it got to be on television, you can do the same. Now, all those folks begin to think about the subject matter. And I think that it's the whole point of understanding all the different entry points in which you can capture someone's attention.
Okay, good. Okay, now I can't resist this question, Solly. Sorry, I just can't resist it. South Africa will host the 2010 World Cup. How are you planning to incorporate this major event into your messaging? When you keep talking, I think it'll come
up. Are we in the game? Well, the World Cup is an event of the youth, first and foremost. I mean, what we call football, the soccer, as you call it here, brings together millions of youth. And in South Africa, during 2010, we expect that there will be thousands of youth from all over the world. In a part of the world where HIV and AIDS is a real issue. For us, HIV and AIDS is like fighting a war. It has this past year decimated more than 2.4 million people. I was reading the stats the other day about 9/11, that it took about 2,000 to 3,000 people. So you are talking about 100 9/11s just this past year. It is an event, it is an issue, therefore, that we cannot take very lightly. When thousands of the world's youth are coming to our part of the world, we would like to use the World Cup as a vehicle to focus attention on how we can eradicate and fight this war. We are saying that we are talking with FIFA that this must be a World Cup against HIV and AIDS. Thank you. And we hope that FIFA will join us in this. As you saw in the past World Cup, FIFA was committed against racism. And at every game, for example, they had a banner in the middle of the stadium that said FIFA against racism. Now, our modern war in Africa today is HIV and AIDS, and we hope the world will join us to fight that war.
One final question for me, John. It's really, anybody from the panel can answer this, but John, let me go to you. You are all engaged, obviously, and committed, not only you, but members of the audience. What about the hundreds, the literally hundreds of media companies who are not involved? Why aren't they here, and how can we change that?
I think that probably for most of the media companies who aren't here and who aren't engaged, the reason is because they haven't been called by Bill Rohde or John Tiestrom or Allison or Solly or Peter or Phil. The idea is that we have to reach out. We have to make these connections. You know, we do a great partnership with the Viacom conglomerate, as it were. Viacom, as you know, is a big grouping of companies that used to be bigger, but still, you know, with MTV, BET, Nickelodeon, and all the rest, Paramount, that is a source of great energy for us. I have never, even in Russia, been fully turned down by a media company to do HIV programming or public service announcements. That is amazing. You think about it, in Russia, never been turned down fully by a company. Sometimes they don't want to put the PSA on the air for free, but they're willing to run it, and they're willing to participate in the collaborative process to put this on. This is where it comes back to us. There's not going to be a media giant that come knocking on your door and say, create a media program for us to do HIV/AIDS. We have to go and reach out. And that's where the leadership of people on this stage and our friends in this room has to come to the fore.
Okay, let me now have the audience, have you, please, step up. There's a microphone in the middle. Before, I'd like to ask Richard, oh boy, we've got a long line here, and I haven't even done the piece de resistance here. Richard, if we can indulge, please, we'd love to have you come up and field some questions as well. Thank you, Richard Gere. Take the seat on the right there. Okay, if you could identify yourself and where you're from.
Okay, my name's Denise Becker, and originally I was from England, but I live in Canada now, in Kelowna near Vancouver. In 1993, my husband and I had a baby girl, and in 1994, we found out that she was very sick, and she in fact had AIDS. My husband and I got tested, and I was positive and he wasn't, and she went on to die at 9 months of age on August 31st, 1994. I've done a lot of media work with news since then, and I find that they keep focusing on the negative of a person's life with AIDS. All they want to know is about Katie and her dying, and which is obviously a very tragic thing for us, and every time we tell them about it, we have to live with that afterwards. But they never ask us what we're doing now, how we're coping, and also the organizations that I've been involved with. For instance, right now I'm involved with the Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network. I'm on their board. And I was listening to your question to Solly about how do you not show the negative. I think that was the basic of your question. He said you have to be very tender and everything. And I think by focusing on stigma all the time, we're placing power on stigma. I'd just like to give an example of last year, or when we did the when the American election, everybody focused on Bush and how terrible he was. And Kerry didn't get enough exposure because of that, I felt. And it gave the power to Bush, and Bush won that election because they saw him as a strong leader in a difficult time. So I'd just like to say, how do people in the media decide on what to focus on? And how do they portray positive people in a positive light?
Okay, all right. Solly, she mentioned your name. You want to take a crack at that? You can defer if you like.
Look, I think I appreciate your point. And certainly we don't purport to know it all. But the issue of stigma in our part of the world is a reality. I'll just give you a personal experience myself. This a few months ago, I had to undergo a medical test because of the insurance, da-da-da-da. And, of course, the doctor asked for everything. Now, when I went to the lab, and this lady was taking my blood, she then came to the point where I had to take an HIV/AIDS test. She then starts saying, do you know that you're going to take an HIV test? I said, well, that's what the doctor said. He said, no, you have to go for counseling. You have to go to the other side of the room. Now, just to cut the story short, the whole issue was made to become something that is not normal. That I was taking so many other tests, sugar levels, this and this and this and this and that. But this other part, which was supposed to be a normal test as well, was being made as if it is something very, very different. And the fact that I'm going to undertake a test on HIV and AIDS, there must be something wrong about me. Now, that on its own is something that makes it very difficult for us to address the issue of HIV and AIDS in our part of the world, because people are afraid just to go and take a test. And we are not going to be able to deal with HIV and AIDS when people are afraid to take a test. So we have to remove that stigma of there's nothing wrong in taking a test on HIV. It's the same as diabetes, it's the same as cancer, it's the same as anything. So I don't know about here in North America, but for us, taboos, the HIV/AIDS issue is an issue. You heard Nelson Mandela say, love your kids enough to talk about sex, because the issue of sex is an issue that is stigmatized, that is a taboo that people cannot even talk about. We, the media, have to take that responsibility to break down those barriers.
Okay. Okay, let's go to Mike, too. We got a lot of people. So I think I want to ask the question short, please, and answers short also, please.
Thank you,
Mike,
very
too.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. What? Well, I have to alternate. I've been given an order. Sorry. Mike, too, in the back.
Yes.
And then we'll come back to Mike one.
Hello, thank you. My name is Jérôme Martin from ACT UP Paris. Sorry for the English and my French accent. I think it's really great to have this description of your good experience with media, but we have, from my activist point of view, I have to point out the problem I met with the media and address a request to all the journalists who are here and to you speakers to relay this to your network. The problem is the following. During each conference, such like this one or other scientist conference, we have in France and in some other countries over-enthusiastic reports on the results of the research which is presented during the conference. Sometimes it's not so bad because, well, for instance, for 4 days, I think I've read 10 articles in Canada talking about a new hope. Well, a new hope, a new hope, a new hope, every day a new hope, but unfortunately always 10,000 people dying every day. And sometimes it's worse, just like in France, two years ago, after the presentation of results on therapeutical vaccines, a newspaper related by the television after dealt with curative vaccine. So during 1 month, all the AIDS structures in France have to answer people who are asking, well, I'm HIV positive, where can I
question,
get a cure?
Question, can we get to a question?
My question is the following. Can you people address during the conference, because the responsibility is sometimes the researcher, sometimes the journalist, can you address a general request to all of them to say, be careful with the information, the presentation of the scientists, research.
Okay, all right.
Ellen Gale said, spread the information faster than the epidemics. I agree with that, but not any information, not a fast food information.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, accurate information is important. I'm not going to, let's move on. I want to get questions, but good point. Thank you. Mike one.
Thank you very much to all the panelists. Pauline Muchina from the Global Coalition on Women and AIDS, which is a UN AIDS initiative. We all know that gender inequality and gender-based violence compounded by poverty are some of the, are the driving forces for this epidemic. And I wanted to hear from the panelists what they are doing in their companies to make sure that they are addressing gender-based violence on programs on TV, because addressing just having programs that talk about HIV but not addressing the root causes of the problem is not going to solve the issue. So I would like to hear them talk about that. And the second question also that I really want to ask is, how do we make women's voices heard in the media? Because even today, when we have women actors, we have women, you know, who are heads of their media companies, their women voice is still not there. And the way women are portrayed in the media, it's violence, like MTV with the kind of music that they show all the time that's so violent against women, talking about rape and suggesting that, you know, men should rape women. And we need to talk about the content of the media. I'm not talking about censorship, but we need to know that we have to connect the dots. Thank you very much.
Okay. Anyone want to take a shot at that?
I'll take a shot at
okay.
it. Okay. I'll take a shot at it as a woman heading an organization, but also within the Caribbean, where there has been this discussion about the programming and the need for us to not censor, as you suggested, and I acknowledge that, but certainly recognize that in islands of our size, we have to have a sensibility and a sense of social responsibility as media houses, not only for the commercial gain. And a lot of the work that we have been able to use and the programming that we've already had has been able to demonstrate that responsible perspective. We have also had a range of synergies across entities. Our National Organization of Women, as well as the National Commission on AIDS, to sensitize people to the myriad issues that are affecting the female population in the Caribbean, but largely a sensitivity to the stereotypes that are perpetrated very often on television and in the print media and our magazines as well. I don't think it's only in the broadcast media. But the point is taken, and I think these partnerships are a demonstration that there is a sense of ownership, understanding and leadership that the media is prepared to embark on issues that traditionally were seen as responsible for either a health agency or another social advocate. So I think that we are, in fact, taking the steps. We are not blame-free, but I think this is a step in the right direction.
Okay. I don't want to monopolize, but let me just add quickly, because MTV is partly what I do. There are obviously a lot of videos on the air that are, you know, really push the envelope. And with women empowerment, we have taken that as an objective, as a very specific objective. And I'll just give one small example. I just came from a group. We're calling it 48 Fest. We announced a competition among young people here to produce 48 3-minute spots. They have 48 hours to do it. We're going to judge a competition. One of the themes is women empowerment. So, you know, we'll see what they come up with. And we aim to air these spots everywhere in the world on all of our MTVs. And, you know, I would not disagree with the fact that there is obviously violence. Women need to be heard more. But, you know, again, we're trying to address that. And, you know, before I go on, does anybody else want to make a comment? No? Okay, Peter? Okay, go ahead.
Way the women are portrayed in the media, I think we keep forgetting the advertising agencies. They
yeah.
produce a lot of the ads that fuel the stereotype. So let's not forget them.
Peter, you want to say something quickly?
Yeah, Bill, very quickly. What I was going to respond by saying is that, you know, from an Indian market perspective, there is a, you know, a universe there of just over a billion people, and you know, the issues related to women and media are something that are, you know, numerous. You could draw up a laundry list of items related to which impact women and the way that media portrays those issues and so on. We as a broadcaster are, we believe, as responsible as we possibly can be, and I'm sure we can be even more responsible, and we continue to try and attempt to do that. Having said that, we do have a standards and practices code and a code of conduct which covers off as many of these possible issues as possible with regard to violence, with regard to portrayal of, you know, female infanticide and so on and so forth. There are some, you know, big, large issues as well as, and in amongst that lot is HIV/AIDS. And I think as a broadcaster that is in the, you know, in that marketplace and across Asia, we have, you know, our moral responsibility to treat each and every one of these subjects related to women in a, on a, you know, on a most responsible basis.
Okay, let's move on. Short, punchy questions. Mike, two.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Hans Bilimoria. I run a HIV intervention project in the city of Pune in India. And my questions will be directed primarily to Peter. Hero project, fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. What we found, though, when we went to colleges and universities and schools is that the focus on sex adds to a kind of double stigma. If I am HIV positive, I have obviously got HIV because I've had sex, and that is what the TV is telling me. Now, this is not my perspective. This is the perspective of a lot of the kids that I've spoken to. So what kind of ideas do you have to get around that? Because, you know, India is a pseudo-conservative kind of society. Everybody is having sex, but no one wants to talk about it. Two, the print media, responsible reporting. I've heard a lot of talk about the electronic media tonight, but nothing about the print media. Now, the print media is crucial, especially in India. And to give you a very quick example, December 2nd last year, the Pune Times supplement ran a story, big headline, 88% of Indians know about HIV/AIDS. You read the small print, it was a Durex condom survey, over 40 countries, 300,000 respondents. But you know, when you pick up a paper, you read the headlines, and you think it's all okay. So my question in that context is, to Peter, do you think that you can sort of somehow come up with some system where reporters in India, media, sort of print media, electronic media, are held responsible and accountable for the kind of reporting that they do? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I think it's a very valid question, and both of them, in fact. I would say that, taking the latter one first, with regard to the print media and radio and so on, one of the initiatives that the Heroes Project did was, in fact, to initiate, and I think Richard touched on that right at the beginning, is that he initiated a dialogue and opened a dialogue with about 50 media companies in India at the Prime Minister's residence, where the Prime Minister was present through the entire duration of that discussion. And it was represented by media owners and chief executives of different media companies who had been invited there specifically to try and do exactly what you were saying, and not only to contribute their time or space or their airtime towards public service communication, but above that, to also talk about HIV/AIDS in the most possible, you know, responsible manner and without necessarily restricting it to, you know, the subject of sex. So I think that initiation has led to a certain amount of, you know, column inches, and I'm sure that, you know, the people that are involved in this entire enterprise are, in fact, monitoring that and seeing how that comes out. I have not personally seen the results of that research and study yet, but I'm sure that is being conducted. With response to your first question with regard to the dealing of, you know, the subject of sex and the communication that tends to reflect sex as being the only way that HIV/AIDS is communicated. Well, look, I think it is something that is an ongoing exercise in terms of covering off all the different issues. And I've seen some of the wonderful commercials that were, you know, have been played throughout the course of this this conference, and some of the films that I've seen earlier. And I think it is the duty of, you know, the creative people in advertising agencies, in television companies, in radio stations, and so on, to be able to cut across the entire spectrum of reasons why HIV/AIDS is you know, in existence today. And the fact that it's, you know, currently talking about sex, I believe that it is the largest, you know, it is the way that HIV/AIDS is communicated currently. And I think it is the first step in terms of creating awareness, and secondly, education, and thirdly, to then inject the programming with subtle and then stronger messaging in terms of how to deal with HIV/AIDS overall.
Okay, quickly, Richard, did you, or is still?
Yeah, just to follow up with that, I agree with you totally. I mean, if we're going to be doing this kind of work, we must be very sure that we're giving correct information. And one of the safeguards that we've had in creating the spots that we have is we do have experts. We have legal experts that look at everything. We have people from the HIV community who also look at our material. We have doctors that we trust look at this stuff to make sure that it is correct. Now, we can't, there's no controls that I know of that are in place in India that control everything that's written, nor is there any recourse, I don't think, for false statements. But I think one thing that we are proud of, that we have initiated, is many newspapers and periodicals now have health columns, regular ones, some of them daily, about HIV, in which questions are brought up and answered in a regular way. And I think this is the most important thing, is that, again, it's regularized as discussion. Now, clearly, way beyond any other possible way, it's sexually transmitted. And it also allows us, as we found out, especially dealing with kids, the PSAs that we do with kids, we found that we can use humor. You saw some of them that were up here. And we found that is a very effective way to kind of break through the PSA barrier that one has of, oh, I'm being taught something or I'm being warned about something. And we found them the most transformative ones. The question before, too, about misogyny and the disempowerment of women is something that we are struggling with incredibly. We have several PSAs that have been done on this subject, and I personally am not happy with all of them. I don't know if our team feels the same way, but we're struggling with this, of how to portray this problem, make it effective, effective in that we're telling the correct story culturally, but also telling a story that's going to be effective in terms of transformation. And you're right, this is a very, very deep problem. I think one of the positive things that's going to come out of this horrendous pandemic is the empowerment of women. And I think we have to be very aware of that as we focus on this.
Okay, quick, John, did you?
Yeah. Quickly. Might just give a perspective on the issue of journalism and journalism education. There's some very important lessons that we learned in this regard. It's not just about giving a one-day seminar for a bunch of journalists and then letting them go their merry ways. One of the things that we found vitally important is to work with publishers and editors to make sure that there is a corporate commitment to excellence in journalism and journalistic coverage of HIV/AIDS and all of the issues that surround the epidemic. The other thing that's important to do is to work very closely with the journalists themselves. We work with them to find interview subjects. We work with them to find stories to write about. We proofread their stories before they go to the editors. We proofread them after they get back from the editing department to make sure that the information is accurate and on target. Because media is so powerful, information is so fundamental to our understanding of this, that if it's wrong, we risk doing more harm than good.
Okay. Again, quickly, one question per person. Mic one, right here.
Hi, Quinn Gorgeous from California, the Bay Area. Thanks, panel. Great ideas, great energy. I have been a little disturbed, astonished, by your silence around issues of the social context of HIV and AIDS. And some of the other people who have asked questions have brought it up, but particularly for Mr. Rohde and Mr. Wilson. How can you, on the one hand, declare your commitment to education and reduction of stigma, while on the other hand, through your own media corporations, through your relationships with multinationals, as well as through your programmatic content, systematically participate in the exploitation and oppression and impoverishment of the poor.
Okay, that's it. One question.
I'm 25 years old. I'm the same age as AIDS. And I believe I haven't yet aged out of your target audience. Please explain yourselves.
Okay. Phil, I'll let you start.
Well,
being the gentleman that I am.
I actually don't own a media organization, so I can't speak to that end of it. But I can certainly speak to our strategy around that. In fact, these are the very issues that we take up every single day, particularly around the issue of what's happening with poor people and what have you. And I guess I would go back to the question of stigma as a way to reference that. I think that often in our discussions, I think when the person asks the question around stigma, the way we address it is by talking about how bad stigma is. And what we recommend to our media partners, that's not the way to address stigma. The way to address stigma is, in fact, having people who are stigmatized talk about their stories. Because as we, in fact, get to know each other, we get to appreciate each other. And I think that is also the way to deal with oppression, no matter where we find it. Now, one of the things that I do as a person who is living with AIDS, as a person who's lived with HIV for 25 years, the entire half of my life and the entire time of the epidemic, is I talk about that everywhere I go. Everywhere I go. That's the first thing I say walking in the door. And I don't do it from a point of being a victim. You know, that I am living with this disease, but I am living with it. And in that process, it allows us to have a very, very different level of discourse. And I think that begins to speak to the issue that you're talking about.
I'll just add, again, just briefly, we wrestle with this all the time. I mean, we have countless conversations, discussions on what to put on the air and whatnot. We have standards committees. We have standards people. In each of our channels, all of the programming must pass muster.
Don't hold Nike and Coca-Cola accountable for what they do in the third world.
Okay, well, I don't want to get on a tangent. Let me just finish my point, which is on our programming. We work very hard to develop a connection with young people. And, one of the privileges that we have is that we do have a very strong vertical connection with an unbelievably sized audience around the world. We can't preach. They won't have it. They want straight talking. They demand it. And we, therefore, seamlessly put in our programming up to a minute in prime time, some channels 2 minutes, some channels up to 5 minutes a day, an AIDS-related message. We wrap it into our scripts increasingly. And that way, creatively, we're able to have a much bigger impact because we have that connection and credibility with young people. Now, I'm not going to let you go on because we have too many people, so forgive me. Mike 2.
My name is Dennis DeLeon. I've been living with the virus for 25 years. I'm here actually as media, writing articles every day for Impromedia, a collection of 5 Spanish language newspapers. But I also head up the Latino Commission on AIDS in New York. I guess my question is, there's one continent missing here, Latin America. And I guess the question is, I have two parts. What is the story in terms of trying to convene Latin American media into some kind of cohesive effort around HIV? And part two is, my own experience is that it's extremely difficult to get media companies to work together. The different media companies that we work with, Televisa,
whatever.
they tend to kind of want to do their own thing, their own way,
right.
And they very rarely consult with people with the virus or with organizations that work with people with the virus.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll just speak quickly on, we just completed a conference in Brazil last week, bringing together media leaders from the region, the entire region, Latin America, similar to what I was talking about earlier as part of the GMAI, coming together, exchanging ideas, and then signing a specific commitment on whatever it is, airtime, billboards, whatever the inventory is, to do an AIDS-related message, either prevention or discrimination. So there was something actually that was done, just recently. Hang on. To your point about getting people to work together. It's difficult, sometimes competitors. It's very, very difficult. But we have found, and I think, John, you mentioned it earlier, media companies, when they're really asked, they don't say no. They really don't. They got to be asked, and sometimes you have to get it on their radar screen because, you know, there's complacency, and God knows we had so much fatigue last year with all the disasters, so you really have to cut through that. But it's very rare that a media company will say no. And forgive me again, because I'm looking at all the other questioners, so I'm going to move on quickly. Mike one.
Robert Klitzman from Columbia University. Thank you for the great work you've all been doing. I'm wondering, what have been the obstacles you feel to sort of having taken this on beforehand? In other words, before Kaiser sort of and Richard Gere and others sort of took this on? And the implications of that, I think, are for other public health problems, be it smoking, obesity, et cetera, or for other media outlets that haven't yet done this. I'm also wondering what the hardest stories to tell have been about HIV, the hardest messages to get out there, given that, for instance, if there's a vaccine that's only 30% effective, it's going to present a lot of issues of how do you tell mixed stories like that.
Do you want to direct that to any particular member?
Whomever.
Volunteers. Phil.
Well, to the story of what's the hardest story for us has been is the truth about the story on the down low, the story where there was no there. And we spent basically 2 years around this story that was extremely destructive, where there was a lose-lose situation. It painted black men as immoral, sexual predators, and it painted black women as helpless victims and vectors of disease. And in both cases, both genders ran for the hills. And it all happened in the context of no data. Saying to people, there's no data there, and really the real story is that there should be data there. So that was probably the biggest challenging story that we faced in most recent times.
Solly, did you have something?
No.
Okay. Where are we? Mike, I'm sorry, I lost track. Mike two.
Hi, my name is Lauren Takelet. I worked very briefly as a news photographer in South Africa. I'm now a teacher and a freelance journalist in New York City. My question is to Solly. You mentioned that the massive amount of education in South Africa hasn't necessarily affected attitudinal or behavioral change. And nowhere is this more evident than in the behavior of Jacob Zuma. I'm wondering how you have used or how you plan to use your considerable media clout to influence or change the behaviors and attitudes of key politicians in your nation.
You want me to answer that?
Well, obviously the case of Zuma was a disservice to all of us, I think. This is what we have established at the SABC as well as all Africa broadcasters, that we, sadly, the research that is coming out there is saying people are aware. And that's the example, as you say, of Zuma. He is aware. He was the head of the whole AIDS campaign. But it is not changing people's attitude. The risky behavior still continues. So we are saying perhaps it also lies in the manner in which we have been communicating, just in the form of PSAs that intend to inform people about HIV and AIDS and build awareness. We have now to begin to address those trigger points that we spoke about. What the lady was saying, gender inequality, issues of stigma, all the issues that we have talked about today. But again, we are saying these messages have to be consistent. They have to be sustainable. So far, HIV messaging has been sporadic, has been at late hours. The PSA themselves are placed very late in the night. We want our broadcast services to take the messaging of HIV and AIDS and mainstream them, put them at prime time when the majority of people are either watching television or listening to radios. When we're driving in our cars, those messages should be there. And it should not only be just a PSA ad, but it should, we for example have started a number of drama soapies, one which is called Isidingo, which is running continuously. I'm sure you know. It is using popular formats to communicate HIV and AIDS messaging. It is using formats such as the news themselves, public service programming, documentaries, the storylines of all the kind of programming that we have should begin to have HIV and AIDS messaging. We hope that is going to, and again, it's not only with a view to build up awareness. It is, in fact, to address the issues that are leading to behavior and attitudinal change. So even the content must change. It is not just the rapidity and the sustenance, but even the substance must change. And of course, one important thing I should mention is continuous monitoring and tracking the performance of what we're doing. So far, we've just been doing a public service responsibility. What we are saying is we have to measure this. We have to measure every quarter. We should be able to produce a report that indicates across the African continent what is the impact of our messaging. So there is, we believe, a very new way of approach that has never been there before. We hope it will succeed, but of course nobody knows. We will be monitoring that process.
Okay, we don't have much time left. Thank you, Sally. Mic one, quickly.
Thank you. I have a really quick question anyways.
Great.
My name is Farah. I'm originally from Bombay, India, now living in Vancouver, Canada. I was wondering if Mr. Mukherjee could briefly talk about how Indian programming is going to address issues of stigma, issues of gender inequality, commercial sex workers, these really, you know, sex in itself, these taboo things, when our icons, our Indian icons, our film stars and our movie stars, it's seen as taboo to even kiss on the big screen. How are you going to fill that gap?
With a lot of difficulty. It is a perennial problem for us. It's not just us. It's, when I say us, it's really a media industry that is dealing with several big sensitive issues. And I don't have an answer for you. All I can say is that I think it is the duty and the moral obligation of every good programming executive, certainly within our company, and I dare say within most responsible broadcasters, certainly in India, and I almost certainly would say anywhere in the world, who would want to deal with issues like this, you know, in a manner which is both pushing boundaries and at the same time working within the sensitivities of the marketplace that they work in. And it is not easy, and because, you know, media by its very nature is a relatively young industry. We have lots of very young people who enter our business straight out of school or straight out of college, and have not had necessarily the opportunity to become completely au fait with all of the issues that exist, you know, out there. They take on these jobs in the programming area, whether it's in the music business or whether it's in general entertainment or news reporting and so on. And I think as broadcasters, we find that very often we get taken to task by the regulator or by, you know, organizations who are looking out for issues that have been misrepresented, and we have to defend ourselves in the best possible way. There isn't an answer that I can give you. All I can say is that we do try very hard to try and stay on the right side, and at the same time try to broaden people's horizons as we go along.
Thank you. I wish you a lot of courage with what you're going to do.
Thanks very much.
Now, I really have to apologize, but we've reached the end, and no, I'm so sorry. I've been given a direct order. You know what? Go ahead.
Thank you.
Rebecca Hurd. Last question.
I will be brief.
It's my turn. I'm sorry, I must insist. It's my turn.
All right, two questions. They got to be short, though. I'm going to cut you off.
Rebecca Hurd from the University of Oxford. My question is to Sally. Last year, a third of a million of South Africans died of AIDS, and one of the primary reasons for that is because of government indifference, denial, and negligence.
Now, you've waxed quite lyrical about addressing stigma, but as widely reported in the independent South African press,
question. Gotta go to the
SABC does not, in fact, give fair opportunity to political minorities in its coverage.
Question. You have to get to the question.
How can you charge that you will try and fight stigma and discrimination when you yourselves discriminate in your political coverage by sanitizing government indifference and denialism?
All right. Wow. Just when Solly thought he was going home.
Well, maybe we should talk about that after this. But look, how does one deal with this? The SABC is a national public service broadcaster in South Africa. And I think it is its responsibility to give a fair platform to everyone. It has got national responsibilities. As a result, sometimes certain things may not necessarily meet its editorial approach, and they may have not to be put on air. And I think that is what every broadcast institution or media institution goes through. I don't know what specifically you are referring to, but editorial decisions are done by every institution, whether in South Africa or North America or anywhere. So I in that process, everyone does mistakes. I don't know what exactly you are referring to that we may have kept out. I think that it will be difficult to deal with that unless I know specifically what you're really referring to.
I'll just say briefly, I from a totally non-biased, Solly and I only know each other for a short time. I've never seen better leadership from a media leader than from the SABC and what you've done. And so, without going belaboring the point, let me just go. I did promise you. You got me into trouble. So one last question.
What I really want to know is how you make a missing issue an issue, particularly in the United States. It has hundreds of AIDS orphans. The number of children living with their grandparents in the U.S. has gone up sixfold in 10 years. These kids have no public presence. They're not entitled to public support under Ryan White because they're not HIV positive. And no foundation has taken them up. No public figures have taken them up. How, with all this power here, do you make an issue where there's a missing issue?
Okay. All right. We haven't addressed that one. Volunteers? Okay. Richard?
I don't know. Right? Hello? I mean, it sounds like a print media issue to me immediately. I mean, I don't know exactly how to deal with that in terms of the U.S., but, I mean, if you wanted to write to my foundation with that information on that, I'm sure we could pass it on to our media friends in the U.S. who could pick that up as a story.
Well, given the demographics of AIDS in the United States, that story has got to be a black story because AIDS in America is a black disease. And I tell you that that's a story that the black media, the black radio, the black press, both magazine and print, would be very interested in. There's not a day that goes by that we don't get a call from some publisher, some editor, some producer somewhere that says, what's the story?
This week's Time magazine actually has a segment on that very subject. And they're quite inspiring stories. I think there's 8 case studies. Forgive me, I'm going to wrap it up. Let me just do 2 quick things. One, I want to thank the panelists for their incredible, incredible dedication and commitment. These are your leaders. They are the ones that came here and answered your questions. Number 2, and most importantly, I want to thank you. Those were tough, spirited questions, and once again, forgive me for cutting those of you off. I just wanted to get through the list, but your questions made it a success, and thank you for asking those tough, very, very spirited questions. Thank you all.